Hello, and welcome to Is Able, the radio show about possibility, where we look at what a person with disabilities can do rather than what they cannot do. Hello, this is Dr. Steve Nurse, and this is our series of episodes on the war in Vietnam. As we just were talking here in the station, and if you didn't know, the 29th of this month, 29th of March, was the day set aside to think about Vietnam, and a lot of people just didn't know about that. So we hope to bring a little more awareness to the vets that were in Vietnam and what they encountered, and trying to get all sides of it. Again, our perspective is not to get political, but to talk about personal stories. So today we'd like to talk about some of the services that are operated for vets. And that's locally here on Vashon. And I think if there's one thing that, again, I was not a vet myself, but one thing I've learned in doing this series is a much deeper appreciation for what the veterans did and what they encountered. And again, that was right at the same time when I was in high school and college. So today we have two guests. We'll talk to them kind of, I guess they can both talk at the same time, but that doesn't make for much of a good show. But we have Mike Mattingly. He's works with the vets here at the Vet Center on Vashon. And we also have with us Doug Keeper. He also works at the Vet Center and is part of that. And as I understand it, helps folks fill out forms. And anytime you fill out a federal form, first of all, you find a place in your schedule where you have 2 weeks when you're doing nothing. That would just be for a one-page form. And from then on, we move forward. So let's talk to Mike first. And Mike, kind of tell us, the Vet Center that we have now at Sunrise Ridge is fairly new, isn't it? I mean, because Granny's moved out of that.
Yes, it is. We, the VFW had a hall that was a congregating part for the vets on the island, and they sold that. The age in the VFW at the time they sold it, which was back in the early 2000s, was about 80, and so they were not able to maintain the building, so they sold it, and it turned it into a private residence. And then we were meeting as a VFW and the American Legion up at the Eagles, and we were looking for a facility to provide more services for vets. And so, because we just meet up there every once a month at the Eagles, and so we were offered the opportunity to look at the small house on the Nike site up here. It was vacant, and they were trying to make a decision whether to burn it down or rent it to the vets and maybe use it as a facility for us. And then Doug and I were both active in the VFW at the time and started talking about the Vet Center, about a Vet Center and the little house and what we could do with that. And as negotiations went on, we had a desire to add the building that Granny's was in because it was larger and we could provide the services we wanted. And turn the little house, which we're still trying to repair and remodel, into a housing facility for veterans or veterans and their families that were in need, preferably ones that came out of rehab or came out of treatment or something like that that needed short-term housing.
And I think that one of the things that that occurs to me is, you know, I was born in 1948, so I was kind of that post-World War II when my father was involved in things in there. And it just seemed like you didn't hear those kinds of you didn't hear of PTSD and some of the issues that that people are dealing with now. I mean, of course, they didn't even have things like Agent Orange, I mean, at that time. But I just think that I hope that the VA and those things are getting better and providing more services to servicemen and to vets. Is that true?
Oh, yes. The system has changed dramatically, particularly in the last administration. It became much more friendly to the veterans, and much more of the facilities were opened up to us, and the ability to file claims and to for the VA to rule on what was germane and what was not. You know, what really drove me to try and help vets was when I was growing up in Tacoma. You talk about PTSD. No, we didn't know about it, but I have memories of these fellas walking down the sidewalk, single file, all the way from the north end of Tacoma to downtown Tacoma, and buying groceries, and then walking back in the same day. And those guys were referred to as shell-shocked. And that's really a PTSD deal.
Yeah.
And that's,
yeah.
You know, when I got out of the service and got in the workplace, I worked for a long time, and then when I retired, I kind of needed something to do. I was kind of not doing what I needed to do and not staying active. So I started looking around, got involved in the VFW, and it kind of led me to this.
Yeah.
And that's helping vets, you know, and providing opportunities, not only the claim side, but opportunities for them to get together and to share things together and have some camaraderie and a central place to do it. That's what the old VFW and American Legion halls were anyway.
Yeah, and I used to hear terms like the 1,000-mile stare, which was kind of also just another terminology for somebody who's, you know, got some issues and we don't know exactly what they are.
Right.
And so I think I think first of all, the community owes you and Doug a lot of accolades just kind of for doing these things. I think it's really important that you live on a rock like Vashon that, you know, you put something back into your community. I mean, just even when I see people out here lined up directing traffic for people to get the vaccination, you know, that's a great deal. So I know you've got the new facility there, and I was there last week or so, and you've got lots of room in there. I also talked to some of the other vets that work in there, Roy.
Right.
Roy Bumgarner, and he does a lot of woodwork, and he's talking about with some of that equipment back in there. So what kinds of services do you hope to provide when you get a little more time or more money or whatever?
Well,
it's both.
Yeah. Well, time and money are both part of it. But, you know, I think one of the things is, you know, we're not trying to remodel that little house. We are remodeling that little house. It has a new roof. It has new siding. I mean, it's not for sure done, but it there's a lot. I mean, it's been really impressive.
Is that from donated money primarily?
Donated money and donated labor.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of
a few people that aren't vets, but mostly vets working on the house.
Oh, that's cool.
Right. You know, and up at the vet center, you know, we talked a little bit about the PTSD profile and the major change in PTSD treatment and recognition from the VA came in 2014. Before that time, if you served in combat, in order to claim PTSD, you had to claim a specific event that caused your trauma.
Right.
So
10 people were killed.
10 people were killed, or I was struck by a bullet, or I saw this person, whatever happened. And in 2014, they changed that claiming form to, by default, recognize potential PTSD by combat deployment alone. Now, if you still had specific situations that you could point to within that deployment that illustrated your cause of PTSD, you could still add those. But that was a much, much different thing for veterans than this ability to say, you know, look, I did this combat tour. You know, and I think one of the best illustrations of this is on the island we have a former Army Ranger. He did two deployments, one in Iraq and one in Afghanistan, on dedicated capture and kill missions. So you want to talk about somebody who has seen nothing but trauma, right? But when you would interview him and try to ask him for a specific event, he would just cry. And like he couldn't really
process.
And so this, I mean, I can't even overstate the value of that. It seems like a minor change on a form, right? But it was a recognition from a veteran's perspective. It was a recognition that the service that you provided the nation was in combat by itself substantiated evidence of a potential traumatic experience. So that was a big deal.
You know, I think that's really interesting because one of the young men that we always, he was a young man. Now he's an old man like the rest of us, but maybe not Doug. He's very young. But he was a farm kid in Ellensburg, and pretty much within a period of about 4 months, he went from milking cows on his dad's farm to shooting people in Vietnam. And I've always said it just kind of seemed to me like when I see the pictures, you know, all the pictures that Gaynor has done and just the pictures that people have provided to me, it just seems like, and you see these kids out there and they're sitting around and they are, you know, different, or they're relaxing, or they're having a beer, but they're smiling and they're, you know, it just seems like you took these kids, a big hand came out of the sky and just kind of took them out of all the cornfields and all the little towns, and bam, you know, they're 5,000 miles away and they're in Vietnam. And that's kind of what he said was he had no idea what that was going to be. And he thought he was going to be the good guy where we're going to have one battle and we were going to get out of there. Right. And that's not what it was.
Yeah, the entry psychosis is interesting, but so is the exit, right? So you get into a combat situation, and you're trained to be on high alert at all times, right?
Right.
So your head's on a swivel, you're physically very, your anxiety level goes up, your adrenaline's pumping, and that's your steady state, right? While you're in combat, that's a steady state. And one of the things that we consult with the veterans about a lot when they come and they talk to us is that that was really useful for keeping you alive while you were in combat. It might not be the most useful skill when you're having ice cream with your daughter.
Right.
And to recognize...
You hear a bang and you jump under the table.
Right. But to recognize that you were prepared to be in that mode for the situation that you needed to be in that mode for, and turning it off isn't as simple as getting a discharge paper. But to recognize that that is a function of the service that you did, and that was something that was trained into you, and it's not a broken element. It's not something that's wrong with you. It was trained into you. It equally has to be trained out, right? So you have to take some time, and it takes effort to not be at that high anxiety state all the time.
And then again, you know, like you're saying, even if we talk about Vietnam, I mean, the vets, they served their time. They got their discharge papers or to go back to the United States. Mm-hmm. And here again in, you know, 48 hours, they're back in a totally different world again than what they've been in. I mean, I think you mentioned that transition time is just as important there as going in.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that, you know, the 2014 is important because it was a reaction to what was going on in Afghanistan and over in the far and over in that area of the world. Whereas in Vietnam, I mean, you know, this is pretty complex. You've got World War II, you've got Korea, you've got Vietnam, and then you've got the other stuff that we got into and the Gulf and
Bosnia
and going back. Yeah. And they're totally different incidents, and the fellas coming out of them have totally different feelings. And as an example, all the guys from Vietnam that were neglected for all those years are still struggling to get back into the claim system because the claim system's not built for them. Today, the guys get discharged from the military and they are filing claims for what happened to them, and the military is aware of it. Yep. They're not having to fight and fill out paperwork and go get physicals and all this stuff to still try and prove to some degree that they got injured. Like if you got a back injury in Vietnam, there's no way you can prove it unless it's in your military record. And most of the time it's not because they didn't keep records like that back then.
Right.
And so we deal with a whole bunch of different idiosyncrasies in guys that are looking for, most of the Vietnam types don't even look for it. They don't even get involved in the claim system. As an example, there's 500 plus Vietnam and Korean vets on this island. We don't have, I bet you, 25 or 50 of them involved.
Yeah.
They just don't come out and go after the services. They don't believe they earned it. They don't think it's worth it.
And you also think, too, you talk about the record keeping.
Right.
Yeah. You know, when I went to the doctor when I was a kid, you went to the doctor, he took your temperature, he, you know, you had an infection or you had a cold or something, you know. There wasn't any documentation of it.
Right.
Now I go to the clinic down here, and I've got a mole on my arm that he is supposed to look at, and they said, well, here's the papers that go with it, and right. You know, there is everything is documented.
Yeah, I mean, it's a two-part documentation, right? One is so when you're looking at claims for military service, right, and this is the thing I walk vets through all the time, and I think for people who aren't veterans, the best way I can explain it is. Like trying to imagine doing your taxes, like complicated taxes with no help. But the result of that is a lifetime. Like it's not this year you got it wrong, next year you get to do it again. Like these, if you do these claims in an erroneous way, they can have extraordinarily long implications. And you know, like Mike said, when they exited in Vietnam, nobody stood there and said, hey, you can apply for disability at the VA.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what happened, you know. And even when I was discharged in 94 after Desert Storm, those services didn't exist. A modern service person being discharged now, they have a whole process. As you're exiting, you get to file. Well, the irony in this is that literally none of the vets that we've dealt with that had that ability, that had the process built in, filed anything on their exit.
Is that right?
You're not ready. You're not ready. This is the thing that you can't underestimate. Yeah. When you're talking about veterans are trained to get back to my unit. You ask any vet that gets injured in combat and sent to a hospital, where do you want to go? They say, I want to go back to my unit, right? And it's a mentality that you're a part of a team, that if you're not with the team, it's not about being in combat. This isn't about like a bloodthirst, right? This is about, those are my guys. I have to be with my people.
Supporting those. Right? Supporting, and I think I've heard a couple of vets say this, you know, supporting the person on your left and supporting the person on your right. And that's what you care about when you're out there.
And so when you're exiting the service and they ask you if you're broken, your answer is nope.
Nope.
Not at all.
Well, you know, I mean, even as an example.
Right. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Even as an example, you know, when someone is injured in Disneyland, I read about this, they ask them, are you okay? I'm okay. I just, that's, you know, and so they document that. And I, with some of these things, I kind of equate them with, you know, I've had a lot of dealings because I use a wheelchair and have a spinal cord injury. I deal a lot with the medical system. Mm-hmm. And I've taken a long time to learn how to fill out the forms right. And use the proper terminology.
Right.
And know that if you appeal it, we know that when I work with school districts and prisons with disabilities, you know, 40-50% of the claims are automatically denied because insurance companies know you're probably not going to refile.
Right.
You know.
So you were prepared then when our kids in the 90s started getting shot cards at school and they wouldn't let the kid go out for athletics unless he provided his record to the school. I mean, that came in the 90s, and that's kind of...
That's right.
That's kind of pervaded our whole society today, I think.
You had to take a physical. Yeah, that's right.
You had to take a physical, and you had to have your shots, and you had to do this, yeah.
And it's like going into these situations. You know, you mentioned, you know, coming out, you may not be ready to talk about these things, but it's also, you know, the people coming out are not dumb. They've got skills, they've got abilities, but I equate it with kind of like trying to get my first mortgage on my house.
Right.
I mean, how many, you sign here and you sign here, you don't know what you're doing. I mean, you know, you don't know how to fill those things out. You were relying on the skills of the banker, you know.
Mm-hmm. But back then it was easy.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, filling out, signing up for a mortgage was, And going through a credit check, it wasn't anything back in the 70s and 80s.
Well, of course, back when you did it, you got 40 acres and a mule.
Oh, so, yeah, right. That's right. It, yeah.
That was a little different situation.
Yeah, and I homesteaded too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
yeah, and that's one of the reasons I found myself called to sort of volunteer my time. My day job is I'm a clinical research scientist. So I spend all of my time looking at clinical data, how data records are structured, how disease states are associated. And so a lot of what I do so I'm a volunteer service officer for the VFW, and I serve at the Vashon Veterans Retreat Center. And a lot of my role is to sit down and just listen to veterans describe what they're going through right now, right? Because a part of a successful claim is you have to establish the level of disability now. VA doesn't pay you for something terrible that happened to you during your service. What they do is they pay the claim associated with the level of disability you're suffering right now. So then you have to establish the disability, which is hard for a lot of these people. Like, it's not immediately obvious. For example, we just recently did a claim with a veteran who had Parkinson's and is developing dementia. Well, they didn't necessarily understand that dementia is part of progressive Parkinson's, so can also be part of their claim, these kinds of things.
And of Agent Orange.
Right.
Yeah,
and then,
as a result of Agent Orange.
And then you have to tie that to their military service. In this case, it was Agent Orange, which is what's on a presumptive list is what the VA calls it. So they've recognized about 14 conditions that if you can establish you had an Agent Orange exposure and you've developed these conditions, that it's presumed they were caught, that your Agent Orange exposure was causatory.
Right.
So that's the presumptive list. If it's not on the presumptive list, it doesn't mean you can't get a claim for it. What it means is it's not automatically approved.
No, it takes 4 or 5 times of resubmitting and justifying and getting doctors to certify that they may think that this was caused by that and on and on and on. So,
you know, I do a lot of work with school districts and helping them if sometimes teachers have a disability and they want to get on long-term disability.
Mm-hmm.
And I have learned working with those people in that process that using the right terminology, one of the things they don't ask for, they never ask for, the insurance company never does, is a personal statement. And I always have that person write up a statement. In other words, how has this disability affected you on the job? What does it allow you to do? And that at least brings something personal to that form.
I think it's absolutely accurate.
Yeah. And I think that even if they don't want that piece of paper, it still brings that person closer, and we've been...
Well, it gives them something to think about.
Right.
I mean, yeah, makes them tune in to what really the problem is here.
Yeah, I mean, it's like working with Medicare and those things that I'm dealing with, and, you know.
Well, one of the things I always try to remind vets of as they're in the process is the absence of evidence is not the evidence of absence, right? So not every ailment that you have is evident in your medical record. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It means it's not in your medical record.
Or you haven't discussed it with a doctor, probably.
So we have to figure out ways to hold up the documentation to accurately reflect what's going on.
Yeah.
So at the retreat, we do have 4 service officers, and we're open 3 days a week in the afternoons from noon until about 4:30. And we take phone calls and make appointments outside of those hours. So we have the ability to work with folks and to particularly their widows. You know, we find a lot of widows coming in the door, having to fill out the paperwork for the funerals and for benefits for themselves and to continue the benefits that their husband was getting and on and on and on. And on the island, there's the need there. It's just a matter of getting everybody aware of the fact that we're a resource.
Yeah. I always thought, too, with the disability-related stuff, there are plenty of services out there. You just have to learn how to access them. And go ahead.
Well, I mean, there's actually a big issue. I mean, you know, accessibility is a substantial barrier. You know, if you have to go, if without the Vet Center on Vashon Island, for example, a veteran or their surviving widow, for example, would have to go off of Vashon Island, get to downtown, go see the VA or go out to Federal Way and see the VFW. They have to get off island. They have to go to this appointment. They have to come back. We had a widow who was housebound. This happened just a couple of years ago. Yeah. She was completely housebound, and the VA would say, well, that sounds like a claim. Why don't you come in and fill your paperwork? She couldn't even get out of the house.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until we went into her home and we sat down and filed her claim with her that she was able to get track to benefits. Right. So, and even for those who are not housebound, right? I mean, it's everybody who lives on an island understands it's not easy to get off the rock or cheap to get off the rock. And so there are people who have accessibility issues that are related that will keep them from getting claims completed if we're not here.
Yeah. And is there some way that someone like me who's not a vet, you know, other than giving you $1 million in a new car, is there some way that I can help? Or if we're talking to our people here on Baishan in the community, how can they help and support vets? In what ways?
Well, volunteer services. I mean, you know, they can come in and help us remodel a house. They can fill a number of positions at the retreat, and they may want to get involved. We really have a focus on trying to get vets with vets to try and make that work. But we certainly appreciate,
because they have that connection.
Yeah, we certainly appreciate donations. Like one gal's in Save the Oar Foundation is offering to give classes and have vets and their families come in and get on rowing machines and exercise.
Sure.
And you know, so there's a lot of things that we'd be willing to do. That,
or maybe I'm just kind of off the top of my head, but maybe somebody could come in if vets are looking for, you know, jobs, or, you know, younger vets that are still out there working.
Sure.
You know, how to fill out a resume, or maybe computer knowledge, you know.
Well, and we have vets coming in to tell us how to get our GI benefits. We want to go to school. You know, they can't sort through all the stuff that they have to do.
My mother worked over at Central Washington University for many years, and was the support services for all the students coming back on the GI Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember, you know, her sitting down with a lot of people for a lot of really long times. You know, they wanted to go to school. They didn't know what they wanted to do exactly. I mean, it was even that process. And many of them hadn't been out of the service more than 1 or 2 months.
Right.
And back into that system. So that's the one way to go on that. And again, if you'd like to help out with a VA center or do something, you can contact me here at the Voice of Baishan. And we'll get you connected. And I want to thank Mike for coming. It's hard to believe, but we have about 6 mics in this room. And so thank you very much. And also, Paul, would love to talk to you about your job outside of the VA center sometime. So thank you very much, Baishan. Take care. Have a great day. And we will see you and talk to you soon.
To stream this or any other episode of Is Abled with Dr. Stephen W. Nurse, go to voiceofashon.org and look under the Shows tab.